what it's turned out to be is the typical political tale. The cover-up is worse than the infraction.
Lawmakers weigh in on the merits of the legislature's Troopergate investigation. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 16th of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Ketchikan residents consider their position in the partisan debate over Palin's Bridge to Nowhere stance.
Should the McCain-Palin ticket lose, she's coming back to be our governor. And if we were in the bad light before she got there, what light will we be in when she returns?
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska. Branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Senator Ted Stevens lost his final pretrial bid today to have the federal case against him dismissed. Alaska's senior Republican senator faces 7 counts of lying on his Senate financial disclosure forms. The case is set to go to trial next week in Washington, D.C. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
The Stevens trial will go forward. That was the decision rendered Tuesday afternoon by Judge Emmett Sullivan. He denied the defense team's motion that Stevens should be protected as a U.S. senator for his work done on the job. The speech or debate clause in the Constitution says lawmakers' legislative actions are shielded, so someone like a senator cannot be tried for his votes or speeches. But Judge Sullivan sided with the prosecution and said it's Stevens' official acts that are under scrutiny, not his legislative acts, so the judge will allow prosecutors to bring up discussions Stevens' office had with oilfield services company Vico, even though Vico was a constituent. Stevens is charged with lying about accepting more than $250,000 in gifts from Vico and its employees. The judge will also allow evidence about solicitations Vico made to Senator Stevens, and it looks like prosecutors will be able to introduce communications by the senator and his staff about securing contracts and influencing agencies, which the government claims were done on Vico's behalf. Prosecutors also want to talk about Senator Stevens' involvement with pipeline legislation that the Alaska State Legislature grappled with. However, the judge did note that some of the defense team's concerns have validity and can be dealt with during the trial on a case-by-case basis. During Tuesday's hearing, Judge Sullivan also ordered both sides to provide the court with evidence so he can rule on a smattering of objections before the trial gets underway. The defense complained that it's still not getting materials clearly labeled from the prosecution, despite repeated discussions about that in court, so the judge ordered the government lawyers to specifically label their evidence. And he ordered the government to turn over more details about FBI interviews and information. Originally, prosecutors only turned over excerpts or summaries, but the defense successfully argued that they need more information. The case is being fast-tracked, as requested by Senator Stevens, who wants it concluded before his November bid for re-election. Judge Sullivan reminded both sides that this pretrial process has to be meaningful, or else they're just spinning their wheels and wasting time. He'll hold a hearing on Thursday to hammer out the remainder of the pretrial issues, and next Monday, jury selection will begin. In Washington, D.C., I'm Libby Casey.
House Speaker John Harris today asked Legislative Council Chairman Kim Elton to call a meeting of the committee that takes care of legislative issues when the House and Senate are not in session. The council provided the funds for the investigation of the firing of Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan. The formal report from investigator Steve Branchflower is due October 10th. Speaker Harris says he wants the council to discuss what to do with that report once it's complete. He says the goal of the council was to produce a non-political document.
My guess is what we need to do ultimately is turn over the investigation, the results of the investigation to the personnel board, probably, because they're the ones that have the legal stroke within the administration to do anything if there's anything that needs to be done.
Harris says there's no question that the legislature has the right to investigate. It frequently does so in various forms. But there is little it can do with the results. Harris says he wants to see the investigation through to its completion. However, he doesn't want it to become a political tool for someone.
Obviously, when this started, Governor Palin was not nominated to be vice president. You know, the whole scenario has taken on a different context here. when this all happened. I mean, this is not, you're not dealing with a governor and her administration. You're dealing with a prospective vice president. And some Republicans have used this, and some Democrats have used this, you know, to try and make hay with it politically. And I think that's a mistake on both parts. And I don't want the report ultimately to be used as a political pawn.
Also today, five legislators in Anchorage and six people in Fairbanks sued to stop the Legislative Council's investigation of the Monaghan firing, managed by Senate Judiciary Chairman Hollis French. The lawmakers are Representatives Wes Keller, Mike Kelly, and Bob Lynn, along with Senators Fred Dyson and Tom Wagner, all Republicans. They say the investigation is an attempt to use the Legislative Council to further partisan politics. House Republican Jay Ramirez, who's Judiciary Chair, says he's disappointed with both sides in the debate over the future of the investigation. He says he wants to see the issue resolved without fanfare on either side.
Certainly. Don't appreciate the behavior of my counterpart, Hollis French, who has, although he is shown contrition, has continued to make inflammatory statements to the national press. On the other hand, I have other colleagues that want to stand in the way of an ongoing investigation.
Legislative Council Chairman Kim Elton, a Democrat, says he sees the suit as a distraction, but he adds that he is comfortable with allowing the court to review the substance of the investigation and that the actions and decisions made so far are appropriate and within the mandate of the council.
The silver lining in this action that's been initiated by the five lawmakers is that some of the debate has now been kicked to the judicial branch, and the judicial branch, unlike the legislature in the governor's office, is far more insulated from the red-hot passion of presidential politics and may actually answer some questions in a way that won't be entirely politicized.
Ramirez, who wears a Palin campaign button and has a McCain sign in his yard, says he was saddened to see reports today of the McCain-Palin press conference on Monday that attacked Monaghan. Ramirez referred to it as the politics of personal destruction.
Walt Monaghan, an honorable man who has put himself in harm's way to protect the public good for more than three decades, is now being referred to as a rogue cop, and his integrity is being impugned. Steve Branchflower, there have already been runs impugning his integrity, and I just think it's a sad reflection on national politics crowding on to the state stage.
He says the national treatment of the issue is setting up the possibility of Monaghan filing a lawsuit against Alaska, for which he says he doubts the McCain-Palin campaign is prepared to reimburse the state. Anchorage Democrat and former state prosecutor Representative Les Guerra agrees that what he calls the character assassination against Monaghan and Legislative Council Democrats is the worst kind of inflammatory partisan politics. Guerra says not only is the lawsuit filed today without merit, he believes it's silly.
And they filed it against not any of the Republicans who voted for the investigation, but what they call the Legislative Council. Well, let me remove the curtain. The Legislative Council is nine Republicans and four Democrats. But they want to make it look like somehow this is Republicans against Democrats when this has been a bipartisan investigation from day one. I mean, I would like them to stop playing games. They just need to stop it.
Former Republican lawmaker Gail Phillips says the public must understand that the legislature is a separate but equal branch of government.
I mean, this is standard procedure in the legislature. It's been done many times. And I think that for the legislature's activity in this issue, they did it exactly right by hiring an outside investigator that wasn't tied to anybody in the legislature and going that route.
Phillips spent five terms in the House, one as majority leader and two as speaker. She says she doesn't know why Governor Palin changed her mind about cooperating with the investigation, but she says the Legislative Council is on the right track to see the work to completion. She says if lawmakers had not looked into the allegations of wrongdoing, they would be soundly condemned.
And would be voted out of office if they didn't look into issues of perceived lawbreaking. And so regardless of whether you're a Democrat or Republican, if it was brought to the legislature, as it has been in this case, and the legislature did nothing about it, that would be more egregious than anything, as far as I'm concerned.
Phillips says there is clear precedence for the legislature's authority in investigating such matters, dating back to the Sheffield administration when attempts were made to impeach him. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Fairbanks officials examine what went wrong at a weekend football game.
We suddenly had, you know, 100 to 200 people, you know, coming over a fence and, you know, looking to brawl, actively attacking our officers.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the University of Alaska, the home of award-winning faculty, students, and alumni, and offering 500 different degrees and certificates. Find one that's right and do something major. Information at alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska. From resource issues to recreational activities, APRN brings you the up-to-date information you need for life in Alaska.
City of Ketchikan Mayor Bob Weinstein has joined forces with the Obama campaign to dispel what he says are Sarah Palin's distortions of her record as governor. But as KRBD's Deanna Garrison reports, Ketchikan's borough mayor is worried that Weinstein's public opposition to the governor could end up hurting Ketchikan in the long run.
I told the Congress, thanks but no thanks, on that bridge to nowhere.
That was Governor Sarah Palin accepting the Republican Party's nomination for vice president in Minneapolis earlier this month. The same bridge to nowhere statement has been a popular applause line in Palin's speeches from Ohio to Pennsylvania. But it isn't going over so well in Ketchikan, where that bridge was planned to be built. City Mayor Bob Weinstein says Palin's bridge claim is misleading at best.
She never told Congress thanks but no thanks because she wasn't governor. She never, as she's implying daily around the United States, gave the money back. Because first of all, she wasn't governor at the time. And second of all, the state received every cent, every dime, every dollar of the allocation, with or without earmarks.
That said, Palin did cancel the project last year, citing a nearly $400 million price tag as the reason. Since then, the State Department of Transportation has announced that it's taking a second look at crossing alternatives, which include both bridges and improved ferry access. Weinstein says he also takes issue with Palin's use of the bridge to nowhere term that he says is offensive to many Ketchikan residents.
For her to then use a phrase that she knows is a slur and a knock and that has negative connotations for the community that we all live in, I think is very inappropriate.
Weinstein has been interviewed by numerous national media outlets about Palin's bridge to nowhere claim. On Wednesday, the Obama campaign, with the help of Weinstein and former Governor Tony Knowles, announced a new group called Alaska Mythbusters, which it says will debunk myths and expose the truth about Palin's record. Weinstein participated in the Obama campaign teleconference, with national media announcing the formation of that group. The mayor's very public stance against the governor and potentially against the country's next vice president is drawing criticism from some quarters of the community. Weinstein says he's exercising his First Amendment rights and should not have to fear retribution from Palin. But Borough Mayor Joe Williams says his city counterpart is not helping Ketchikan.
Should the McCain-Palin ticket lose, she's coming back to be our governor. And if we were in the bad light before she got there, what light will we be in when she returns?
Williams says he personally found himself on Palin's bad side when he publicly called her out during last year's Alaska Municipal League meeting.
At the AML meeting, I asked all the mayors of Alaska who were in attendance, who, ask them to raise their hand, who here today was able to meet with the governor? Who got a meeting with the governor? One hand rose, and he said he got that meeting 6 months ago, but hasn't been able to get a meeting with her since. That's how accessible our governor is to our mayors. And she should know better because she's been one. So that's what really got me into trouble.
Williams says the governor confronted him during a legislative fly-in in Juneau this spring. Now Williams says he's helping to coordinate the McCain-Palin campaign's efforts in Ketchikan.
It would be great to get the governor out of Alaska to Washington, D.C., because that could only be good for Alaska. And then, of course, we'd have a new governor to work with them.
The New York Times reported on September 11th that the governor had dropped references to the Bridge to Nowhere from her speeches, at least while she was in Alaska. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
Fairbanks police and school district officials are trying to understand what caused off-field fighting at a high school football game last week. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the brawl which cut the game short may be tied to a rise in gang-related trouble in the city.
Rival student groups, including some with gang allegiances, are blamed with instigating large fights in the stands and a parking lot at Lathrop High School last Friday night. Fairbanks Police Chief Dan Hoffman says the potential for trouble was recognized well before the homecoming game between Lathrop and West Valley High Schools, but he stops short of strictly attributing the brawl to gangs.
Certainly some of the folks do have known gang affiliation, and there were people observed, you know, dressed in gang colors, throwing gang signs, etc. But overall, I wouldn't characterize this event as strictly gang-related so much as I would just different students who have problems with each other.
Hoffman says eight officers plus school district security were on hand for the game, but that the brawl in which several police force members were among those injured escalated too quickly to maintain control.
We suddenly had, you know, 100 to 200 people, you know, coming over a fence and, you know, looking to brawl, actively attacking our officers who were, you know, trying to keep people contained. It was, it became a very chaotic situation very quickly. Several officers punched, kicked, you know, thrown on the ground.
Hoffman says there were no weapons involved in the fight, but five students were arrested. He says police are working with the school district to design and implement better crowd and trouble control measures. Lathrop principal Karen Gaborik says her school is generally a safe place. She blames non-students for instigating the fights, but says the school is not hiding from what happened.
We need to address this situation. You know, we can't continue to pretend it doesn't exist. I mean, we're experiencing troubles here, and we need to be proactive.
Gaborik says Lathrop is making a concerted effort to build positive school culture and address behavior issues on campus. She says the task now is to extend that to school events where the community mixes with students. She says there will be changes to how big sports games are handled.
You know, the big rival town games, West Valley, North Pole, Lathrop, those games, we've talked about holding on Saturdays in the afternoon earlier, you know, so instead of late on Friday nights, that might help. And then also looking ahead to basketball, because those are big community events, really looking at how we control the gate, so if somebody leaves the event, they can't come back in. And then also then we work closely with the police, and when the police tell school officials, look, that person should not come through the door, that we don't let him in.
Gaborik says more work needs to be done to identify troublemakers. Gang-related activity has been on the rise in Fairbanks for some time, and a city task force is looking at the issue. Chief Hoffman says the magnitude of the local gang scene is unclear.
We oftentimes have people here who either come from other locations and who claim to have actual affiliations with lower 48 gangs, you know, Crips, Bloods, things like that. You also have local kids who sometimes claim affiliation to such groups. Whether they actually have any such affiliation is often a matter of conjecture. But the bottom line to us is I don't think it really matters whether somebody is a true affiliated gang member or whether they're just professing to be one. If they're engaging in all those types of destructive and disruptive behaviors, the outcome is the same.
Police just announced the indictment of a man implicated in a gang-related car-to-car shooting in the city last month. Hoffman says the potential is there for a serious gang problem in Fairbanks. He says there's only so much police can do and that it's up to the community and parents to set a standard for acceptable behavior. Hoffman expects gang activity to cool off with the weather. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Power is back on in the city of Adak. The city council approved a new agreement with the Aleut Corporation, which says the corporation will sell the city 5,000 more gallons of fuel on credit while helping them find low-interest loans. The city plans on selling the utility to TDX Electric, but will have to maintain it until at least December. Janet McNall is one of the five council members who voted for the agreement.
You know, I think AEC has honestly tried to help us out in this situation.
Though McNall is happy to have come to another agreement with the Aleut Corporation, she says she's frustrated with how the city leadership has managed the situation over the past few months.
It's always right now, right now, right now. That's the only thing we ever do here in ADAC is jump from one crisis to the next. In between times, everybody's happy-go-lucky and, oh, yay, everything's fine. But the minute that crisis comes up, oh, well, why didn't we prepare for that? Well, gee, I don't know.
McNall says she thinks it's time for change in ADAC.
There is some of us on the council that will be working very hard towards that change of leadership.
Two council members voted against the agreement but could not be reached for comment. City Manager Steve Hines says he's unhappy with the agreement and its terms and conditions, but he had no voting power. ADAC has been on a partial power schedule since early September. When the power crisis began, government contractors left the island a month before scheduled, depriving local businesses of thousands of dollars worth of sales.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and October, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com.
On Capitol Hill today, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation's telemedicine program was held up as an example of what high-speed internet access can offer rural America. YKHC President Gene Pitola testified by video conference from Bethel before the Senate Commerce Committee this morning. The committee's hearing was about the importance of broadband or high-speed internet access in the United States. Pitola told the committee that his health corporation leads Alaska in the delivery of high-speed internet medical services. He described how they connect rural Alaskans in small clinics with doctors in Alaskans' urban centers. Pitola says they even have radiologists on call as far away as Ohio.
We have two full-time radiologists reading all the images 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from Dayton, Ohio. Using our broadband network, we're able to send patient images directly to the radiologists in Dayton. There they read the exams in real time. There's no delay.
Pitola says veterans in rural Alaska could use telemedicine to receive treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder or other mental health issues. Being able to afford telemedicine in the bush is rare. The YK Health Corporation was able to upgrade to high-speed internet in part because private industry invested $50 million. But Senator Ted Stevens says more communities can get up to speed with help from the federal government. He introduced a bill today that would provide rural health care providers with discounts of up to 60% on their telecommunication infrastructure.
In Alaska, our residents, and especially our elderly residents, depend upon the ability of their health care providers to be able to communicate rapidly and effectively over the internet with the health care community. Many Alaskans live off the road system in our rural areas, and the bottom line is that broadband is often the only way for them to receive the same quality of health care as Americans living in what we call the South 48.
Stevens Telehealth for America Act would allow rural providers to tap the Universal Service Fund, which was set up by Congress to even out the cost of phone lines for all Americans. Currently, the fund only provides support to larger health care providers, but Stevens would like to see it help remote facilities and specialized ones like veterans centers or clinics.
This bill would enable smaller providers to share information such as medical records, provide improved training to healthcare personnel through video conferencing without requiring the personnel to travel away from the provider area, and to enhance the overall ability of the healthcare community to provide rapid and coordinated responses to all Americans in time of crisis.
At today's Commerce Committee hearing, telecommunications experts testified that the United States' average download speed is 30 times slower than Japan, even though it costs about the same. Alaska has the worst download speed ranking, according to the Telecommunications Union, the Communications Workers of America. Stevens' bill has already garnered bipartisan support. No action is expected on it anytime soon, however, because the House and Senate are tied up with energy and a defense authorization bill and will soon break so members can go home and campaign. Juno's Perseverance Theater kicked off its 30th season last weekend with the government inspector Nikolai Gogol's Mistaken Identity comedy. It's a debut for Art Roach, who returns as artistic director after 6 years in New York. KTOO's Weld Royal has the story.
Art Roach calls the opening set for the government inspector Gothic Fantasia in rural Alaska. It's meant to be a half-finished room off a garage where a corrupt official and his friends like to hang out.
The way this town works is if you have a problem, if you need your tax assessment lowered or your parking ticket fixed, you just drop off a TV or a case of liquor or some cigarettes and the mayor takes care of it. So the room is full of boxes of product.
There are flat screen TVs, iPods, IMAXs, and boxes of Irish whiskey. A stuffed grizzly bear guards the loot, stacked along walls sheathed in tarp and duct tape. This is Roach's first major performance since he took the top job at the Douglas Playhouse. He started off his career in theater, building stage sets for Perseverance founder Molly Smith. After more than a decade, he left to study stage design in graduate school at New York University. At that time, another student who had lived in Alaska convinced Roach that the classic Russian tale of petty corruption and greed would fit perfectly in the state.
There isn't anything that refers to, you know, Wasilla or Alaska, but there are some things that sound relevant to hear, like you can ride a horse for 3 days and never get anywhere. The whole scenario where there's someone new in town and they assume that that must be the person that they're looking for because there's never anyone new in town.
The Perseverance performance modernizes the language of Gogol's tale of coarse Russian provincials, satirical servants, and haughty young cads, but doesn't change much else. That's according to Emma Griffin, who's in from New York to direct the play.
Something that is important to me in dealing with a text that is a classic text is that the approach to the language and the approach to the situation is modern and colloquial, and that its sense of comedy is modern. The jokes don't feel like old Russian jokes.
The tale is told with biting wit and amiable non sequiturs. Lars Barnstable is the young man everyone believes is the government inspector. Bill is his servant, and here he helps another cast member to a false conclusion.
Oh, he's a general, all right. And then some.
So, what's that? Does that mean he's higher or lower than a real general?
Higher.
Really?
A few lines sound like they're straight from today's headlines. In this scene, Barnstable plays up his experience with more bravado than fact.
All right, I said. Mr. Chairman, delegates, citizens, I accept your nomination as vice commissioner of this department. However, I've got my eyes on each and every one of you, so watch out.
The play casts no judgments, and even the shadiest characters come off as likable. Or at least that's the way Tsar Nicholas saw it when the play was first performed in the 1830s. He's reported to have said that The Inspector is a very good play because everyone gets it, including him. In Juneau, I'm Welsh Royal.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. Wired reports tonight from Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ann Hillman in Unalaska, and Weld Royal in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Miss our newscast today? Listen to APRN's Alaska Morning News, Economic Report, and News Nightly on the web at APRN.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.